I'm Katie Gorham here with Joseph Thompson, the director at MassMoCA, the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art. Thanks so much for being here today.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah, you have some very exciting things happening over at MassMoCA, a very ambitious expansion. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
We're busy this week. Well, in short, we're doubling the size of MassMoCA. Many might think it was already plenty big enough, but more space means more time and more capacity to host more art, particularly art that needs generous amounts of space and light, and that might be hard to accommodate in normal, urban, space-bound, time-cramped institutions. We're not that in the Berkshires. We've got plenty of room and plenty of time.
And this expansion will actually make MassMoCA one of the largest contemporary art museums in the country. Is that right?
I think that's true. Back before we were, I used to always claim it. But now that we are, in fact, I don't like to focus on it so much anymore.
Sure. So was that the idea behind going into this expansion, just having more, like you said, space, more room to hold these art installations?
I think the seed corn, the beginning of the idea was probably our collaboration with Saul LeWitt, the great conceptual artist who installed 105 magnificent wall drawings on about 30,000 square feet in a building all unto itself. That was a project we did with the help of Yale University Art Gallery and the Williams College Museum of Art. And that was like a light bulb going off. Up until that time, everything we did at MassMoCA changed every year. From stem to stern, we changed every square foot of exhibition space, organizing and hosting five or six major exhibitions a year, to say nothing of a kind of rollicking roster of performing arts programs. But then LeWitt came, and it was like this solid core, like a proton around which are these electrons of changing exhibitions swirled, and it just felt great. It was something that people could come back to over and over again. It meant that no matter when a visitor came to MassMoCA, there was plenty to see. Up until that time, if we were changing a big exhibition, you know, a half or a third of the museum could be cupboards bare during the installation. But LeWitt just added something that was, it felt profoundly interesting. We tested it again with the Hall Art Foundation and Anselm Kiefer, and that was terrific. And then we sort of looked and measured our assets, and they were buildings and space, a really talented staff that could help artists realize their wildest dreams, and a growing audience, an audience that was seemed hungry for more and deeper. So we teamed up with a couple of artists that we've worked with frequently. James Terrell has been visiting MassMoCA for 30 years, and he eyed a large abandoned concrete water tower, big cylindrical building, 60 feet in diameter, and every time he visited, he said, "I have a project for that building at the right time." Dreaming about that project, the dream got bigger, and he essentially designed an exhibition that, I don't know, takes 30,000 or 40,000 square feet of space. It's 9 works, light and space works, by which I mean Jim essentially slows down light. Light's around us all the time, but it usually illuminates other things, or we think of light as something that allows us to see something else. But Jim's work really congeals light. He makes light into a thing that you can almost hold on a platter in front of you. He lets us see light in an entirely new way. And he's arrayed 9 works that really focus on his interest in art there. It's a vertical vintage, including one work from each of the 6 decades in which he's been active as an artist. It's also kind of a horizontal, long span view of his work, including one of each category of work that he's made. So we're really excited about that. He's one of several artists with whom we've had a long relationship, who will be coming back in a long and deep way in this new Building 6 project.
Like you said, just one of the many artists who will be featured in this new space. We've got some long-term residencies from artists like Laurie Anderson, for example.
Well, it's funny, sitting here staring at this microphone, that you bring up Laurie Anderson. Laurie is also another artist who has made work over the last 15 or 18 years at MassMoCA. She was one of our very first artists in residence, and she enjoyed using our Hunter Center and its technical capability. And I can't remember when it was. It was probably shortly in the aftermath of the opening of the Saul LeWitt building, so that would have been 2008 or 2009, we were on stage, and I just asked a playful question of Lori, who's at the end of the day a great storyteller, songwriter, great musician, multimedia performing artist. And I asked her on stage what a museum of Lori Anderson would look like. And because at the end of the day, she's a voice. And she immediately said, it would look like a radio station, Radio Anderson. That became a metaphor for a set of exchanges we had about what might it be to try to create a museum space for somebody whose work is essentially storytelling and whose main tool is her voice. I mean, Lori uses technology, body mics, really interesting instrumentation. She's invented all kinds of new forms of the violin, for example, in her work. But she's a storyteller at the end of the day. We eventually dropped the Radio Anderson metaphor as we spoke about it, and it got real. We started thinking about spaces. One of them is a studio space that will look and feel much like the room we're sitting in right now, including windows that people can look into from outside to watch the work being made. When she's not there, which obviously will be frequently, she's a New Yorker through and through. I'm guessing we'll see her 20 or 30 days a year, maybe, in North Adams. But when she's not there, people will be able to enter the studio, don a set of headphones, just like you have on right now, and dial up various stories and songs from Lori's really deep body of work that now stretches back 35 or 40 years. So she'll also have a gallery and a archive space. Essentially, it's going to be Lori Anderson's home away from home, and we hope if we do it right, it will feel like Lori has just left the room anytime you go in.
There's a virtual reality element to her
space
as well.
She is. That's new work. Lori is an inveterate inventor. She is always looking at new ways to tell stories and to essentially get her music and words across. And right now, she's deeply interested in virtual reality, and she's created a couple of worlds that you can enter. They look at the beginning like rooms onto which she's scrawled drawings and bits and phrases. They're kind of entry points into her stories as you don these virtual reality glasses and a special set of gloves that allow you to fly through the walls and into her space. You can saddle up and touch a piece of text or stroke a piece of wall, and you'll enter a world and story or song by Lori. And there's seemingly no end to them.
I'm Katie Gorham, along with Joseph Thompson, the director at Mass MoCA. And it seems like around the country, there are a lot of exhibits that are becoming, you know, more interactive for the attendee, and especially with the exhibits that'll be featured in the new space at Mass MoCA. Was that something that you sought out in curating some of these exhibitions for new space?
Well, I guess yes and no. With Lori's work, we knew we were going to be working with Lori. We made a commitment to her. And she's leading us on this adventure. It's not surprising that she's taking us in new directions. It's her technique for her entire career has been to use technology in very gymnastic, acrobatic ways. Although we weren't envisioning virtual reality sets when we first began talking with her. I guess in the case of another artist that we've teamed up with, an artist who's dead but whose work lives on, Gunnar Schoenbeck, that is pointedly participatory. Schoenbeck is a name that most of your listeners won't know. He taught music for 50 years at nearby Bennington College. But besides teaching music and composition, he was a composer himself, he had these two heartfelt, deep beliefs. One was that every human being has within them a musician, that all humans are musicians, and everybody can sing, and everybody can make rhythm, and anybody can whistle. And he thought that most of us successfully sublimate or suppress that urge, probably for the better in some cases. But he sought to help people get that musician out by his other belief, which was that every inanimate object, a spoon or a fork or a car hubcap or anything, had in it a kind of inherent musicality, a tone waiting to get out, or a rhythm waiting to be discovered. And he's essentially spent his career trying to bring those two beliefs together, that human beings can make music and that anything around you can be an instrument. He would take out an ad in the Bennington Banner and say, "Meet me at the Bennington Common Green at this time and place for a concert." And he would bring music and his growing collection of handmade instruments and lay them out on the lawn. And sometimes a few dozen people might show up. Sometimes hundreds of people would show up in a combination block party, parade, concert that would unfurl over the course of a day, a big musical party. We've gathered many of those instruments together and put them in what looks and feels for all practical purposes like a high school band room, shelves going around the walls. The instruments are carefully organized by Mark Stewart, the great impresario, Pied Piper, kind of ringleader, bang on a can all-stars. Mark has been working for the last, year or so, organizing these instruments, making them safe, tuning them, cleaning them. And he's, in essence, the curator of this wonderful collection of instruments that all our visitors are invited to use.
I got to a tour of the new space, and that was especially intriguing, all of the different instruments. I think I overheard Mark mentioning that, you know, some of Gunnar's instruments over the years maybe have gone missing. Maybe his students had taken them, but once it came out that he would be having an exhibit at Mass MoCA, that the instruments were miraculously returned.
Yeah, kind of like the mythical baby that gets left in a basket on your porch. They're coming home.
You had said big musical party, and you know, this is a nice transition into all of the big musical shows that happen in Mass MoCA throughout the summer. Your commitment to performing arts is so wonderful, and there are some great festivals coming up. Solid Sound that Wilco puts on every year.
That's June 23rd through the 25th. That's always so much fun. And by the way, tickets are going really quickly. I think it could sell out this year. So if any of your listeners are interested, get them while they're still available.
In being a performing arts space, how do you guys go about deciding what events to host?
You know, we're pretty ecumenical. We like, first of all, work of great quality, but we're not stuck on anything. I mean, we've had polka, country and western, obviously a wonderful slate of indie rock and roll, which is very near our heart. But we also organize a progressive bluegrass and American roots music festival every September called Fresh Grass. And we also have a new music festival with the wonderful Bang on a Can ensembles that really takes over every nook and cranny of Mass MoCA for almost the entire month of July. I think there are 40 little pop-up concerts and a couple of weekends of fully staged new music, which is wonderful. So we cover a lot of waterfront, but you know, what are the hallmarks? Excellent musicianship and things that we think are, you know, always curious audience would be interested in. So, and we're not afraid to take risks and try things that are new.
And I think in this area, especially the Capital Region and then in Western Massachusetts and the Berkshires, people are generally interested in a variety of styles of music and are art enthusiasts. Do you think that the museum expansion and the music events that you host throughout the year help draw a crowd from outside of this immediate area as well?
Oh, without doubt. The musical programming and theatrical programming and dance and choreography that we host at Mass MoCA not only draws people from all over the place. I mean, at Solid Sound, there'll be people there from 40 or 50 countries. I think last outing in 2015, we covered, I believe, every single state. So it's a big national and indeed international draw. But more to the point, I think that what we love about the programming is that because we host so many kinds of music, we get a great diversity of audience too. And many may arrive at our front gate, not even knowing what Mass MoCA stands for, the Museum of Contemporary Art. They may think of it as simply a venue for whatever musical concert or piece of theater or dance performance they're seeing. But then they discover it. They get in and realize they're at a museum and wander into the galleries. And even those people who may think they may not like contemporary art quickly learn, in most cases, that not only is it not all that bad, but it's actually quite interesting because it's about the world we live in today, made by artists who are living with us and who are living through the world that we're living through today. And it's, I think, while, you know, a visitor to a, you know, country western show that we may have may think that contemporary art's not for me, they'll often find out that it is. And it's interesting, beautiful, fun, provocative, sometimes challenging, sometimes irritating, but always interesting.
Sure. And what do you think about the term art country, area of North Adams and Western Massachusetts being dubbed as art country?
Well, that's sort of interesting. You know, if you just do a survey of the museums and the institutions that are in this neck of the woods here in the capital region and on up into Vermont and down over. I like it. I think that it, first of all, it contains in one word, one made-up word, the two ideas that we have a beautiful collection of cultural resources in great depth at a very high quality, set here in a splendid, you know, neck of the woods, a place where you can go hiking, where the biking is fantastic, there's good kayaking. And I think that juxtaposition of really wonderful outdoor recreational activity and deep culture is something that's powerful. I wish that we could get in that somehow to food. This is an increasingly interesting food region. We know that from the Hudson Valley on up into the Berkshires, there's a lot of wonderful cheesemakers and microbreweries and people who are making really wonderful food. And I think that in, somewhere in that triad between art, food, and nature, there's a really powerful long-term destination quality that will serve this region well for a very long time.
Absolutely. I'm here with Joseph Thompson, the director at Mass MoCA. Talk to me about kind of having this idea come to fruition in terms of, you know, getting the funding and the resources for this. Was that a challenge?
Oh, it's always a challenge. I mean, money's never easy to find. And we're still working on it. This was when you add it all up and include the endowment that we need to take care of the buildings for a long time and be able to afford the heat, light, power, to take care of the masonry walls and the wooden mullions on the windows. It's a lot of money. It's like $65 million. We were so lucky that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts put up the first $25 million, and we're raising another $40 behind that. I just take a moment to pause and say something about that. We've been lucky over the last 30 years. Mass MoCA has enjoyed the uninterrupted, spirited, generous, and bipartisan support of seven governors, both Republicans and Democrats, two mayors, both really strong-willed, independent mayors who have both been supportive of the project. I think, I forget, three senators and four reps from our region. It's been a unanimous, bipartisan support for 30 years. And at a time when it seems at times like nothing can get done in the public realm, this is a project that proves otherwise.
Absolutely. And it's very exciting. You're going to be unveiling the space to the public this coming Sunday, May 28th, the new Mass MoCA expansion, Building 6.
Building 6 is what it's been called historically. We've recently renamed it the Robert W. Wilson Building after a very generous supporter who has been with Mass MoCA from the very outset. On the 28th, there's going to be a fun day. I hope everybody drops by. It will include a wonderful sound suit parade by the artist magician Nick Cave, who has a blended, spectacular exhibition at Mass MoCA right now called Untel. But Nick is going to bring his sort of trademark sound suits, these wonderful, complicated, costume-like sculptures that he makes for the human body. They'll be donned by dancers and will be moving through the museum. I think that's 3 o'clock on Sunday the 28th. There'll be a marching band, a kind of avant-garde art marching band that will be making pop-up performances. I'm sure Mark Stewart will be performing, and as well as other artists. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll open the gates for a concert. Cake will be playing, a really fun, infectious band that felt like the right kind of one. It's a great indie rock band, but it's also a great party band as well, so celebratory. There's a warm-up, and they'll take the stage around 7:30 or 8 o'clock. So a full day of event beginning at noon on this coming Sunday, May 28th.
This is a very exciting time. Joseph, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Happy to. Thanks for having us, and we'll look forward to having you back.
Absolutely.